The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Welcome back. Hey, TGIF, right? It's Friday night. And of course, we got a special edition of Consider This Live for you this afternoon. Rob Washburn heard Lou was coming in. He said, hey, I want to be there. So he is here as well with us this afternoon. Lou Rinaldi, MPP for Northumberland, Quinty West, and still Northumberland, Quinty West. They haven't redrawn the boundaries yet. Rob Washburn is here with me as well. We're going to be talking about all things Ontario politics. Some of this stuff we covered on our Cogeco debate with Lou and I, the fall economic statement, of course. Additional hospital funding, which is great news for those who haven't already heard this story. We're going to talk about hydro, because hydro is the issue. Also, Rob wants to talk a little bit about the Auditor General's report for the province of Ontario. Before we get to that, here is, in my estimation, the theme song for Northumberland, Quinty West. Here are Madman's Angels and Green Hills of Northumberland. We'll be right back after this.
I've seen the city lights that shine so bright, you lose all sense of time. I've wandered ancient lands with castles grand, just to see what I could find. But never have I found such peace, no matter where I roam, as in the green hills of Northumberland, the place that I call home. The way the waves fall on the sandy beach, the boardwalk full of smiles, the shades of green along the countryside, the hills go on for miles. And everyone you come upon will smile and say good day. You're in the green hills of Northumberland, and you're gonna wanna stay. The market bustling with artist wares, and the farmers bring the best. The smell of fresh baked bread flows through the air, and I'm feeling truly blessed. And the music blows throughout the land like nowhere that I've known. Through the green hills of Northumberland, the place that is my home.
That is Green Hills of Northumberland by Madman's Angel. And that, of course, is I think that's from the CD, A Little Help With Our Friends, the United Way production. Anyway, great to hear Joyce there. Welcome to the studio, Lou. Great to have you here.
Good to be here.
Glad that you are here. Rob Washburn, also here this afternoon. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thanks, Dave.
I guess before we should probably get right in, I want to talk about the hospital funding first, Lou, if we could, because this is actually the second round of additional funding. And this is funding that's going to be going forward. This isn't just emergency funding. They got they got about $900,000 in June.
Yeah, and about the same amount.
And about the same amount now. And so that's on a go forward.
That's equivalent to about 2% thereabouts, and that's an additional to base funding. And frankly, after give credit to the folks, to the board and all the folks at Northumberland Hills Hospital, that's sort of a number that they landed on after doing all the reviews, and they brought in outside folks to do all that good stuff. So the number kind of matches their needs. We're still going to have some pains in the future because one of the big reasons, we are growing an older population here.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty soon, 50% of our residents will be over retirement age. And they're the folks that require, in general, have some of the heaviest needs. So it's going to be an ongoing, we'll never get to the end.
Well, this is like the shortfall, though. I mean, what we've seen over the last few years or so is the fact that, you know, they've struggled with their budgets, but they've been short at pretty much at this level. So is what we're seeing, is this the province saying, okay, we know you guys have been pushed to the wall for the last 5 years. This has pretty much been your struggling point. Let's give you that additional funding on a go forward, and let's see if we can't help.
Well, you know, no, I think we recognize, and it's not just here. It is across the province, and mm-hmm. and some of the large hospitals in Toronto, like the sick kids and whatever, because of the volume and so forth, when new funding formula, they actually manage. I heard one day that one hospital, I'm not sure what, actually has a reserve fund. Whether other hospitals. So the small to medium-sized hospital like we have here in Cobourg across the province are the ones that are having the funding formula, although everybody agrees that's the way to go, but it doesn't quite match. So that's, I think, what the ministers try to identify those shortcomings. So it is very technical in nature how they do it, mm-hmm. but I'm delighted that we're at a point where we could take a bit of a breather.
One of the things that has happened is that we went through this incredibly arduous process by which the hospital was able to determine what services it was going to keep, but also to identify the shortfall and then to get the funding. What's going to happen in the future? I mean, is the system going to be more responsive in terms of their financial needs? I mean, if you're right about this increased need for services and increased senior population and the increased stresses, is it going to be that we're going to have to go through all these hoops each time in order to get the funding, or is it going to be easier now?
I wish I had a magic wand.
Mm-hmm.
I think healthcare is evolving on a daily basis. I mean, technology today... So I learned a little bit at the high level. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's making procedures totally different than we used to be. Like, I mean, we know that cataract surgery, you're in and out in 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Even 10, 15 years ago, you were there for 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as process changes, the demands of the community changes. One of the things I stressed with the ministry is that with the minister, and, Eric's been a good friend of mine, is the fact that somehow we need to leave some flexibility because not every community is the same. So, for example, you look in the Durham area,
mm-hmm.
a lot of young families, a lot of young kids. We move half an hour east and the demographics change
mm-hmm.
from that perspective. So we need to make sure that we have some flexibility on the funding formula. I don't know how to do it, but my recommendation is to address those pressures within those different communities.
Do you ever wonder, though, that part of it might be the way that the LHINs are organized? I mean, we're part of a LHIN that stretches from the GTA,
Scarborough,
all the way out here and then way north up Halliburton Way. I mean, is that part of the problem, too? I mean, when you're trying to, they're trying to manage that type of diversity that you just described.
Yeah. So LHINs, I mean, there's 14 LHINs across the province.
Yep.
So that's how big they are. And, the role of the LHINs is to look at closer down than Queen's Park does, from the ministry does from Queen's Park at the needs. So part of the Patients First legislation that we're going through right now, reform of the, we are, the LHINs are going to be create some sub-LHINs. And I know that some people say, well, that's just more bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not, because they're taking the same type of resources and zeroing it down. So, for example, and I don't know what those boundaries of the sub-LHINs are going to be, mm-hmm. but I suspect, you know, Northumberland or West Northumberland, I really don't know. They haven't landed yet, but they will shortly. To have a function within the LHIN that zeroes in the sub-LHIN. Mm-hmm. So they're able to focus, spend more time with the needs of Northumberland's hospital, but they go beyond the hospital. They deal with issues of community care. And just to give you an example, so whenever there's a doctor shortage, and that's been on and off, mm-hmm. we get a lot of calls in my office. You know, we need a doctor. So the sub-LHIN will take that role on as well, so that people have a direct point of contact with the ministry to say, you know, I just moved here, or my doctor retired. You know, where do I go? Where do I get, you know, my renewal of my prescriptions? Mm-hmm. So part of that is going to be the sub-LHIN responsible. So all it really does is, and there's going to be probably half a dozen sub-LHINs within each LHIN. I think there's 84 province-wide. Mm-hmm. To best, you know, get down closer to the ground to because we are different. So most jurisdiction in Canada have some type of similar system. Mm-hmm. They've tried to go under one roof, like we were at one time, just the Ministry of Health. But then it's very cumbersome, because I always say, somebody at Queen's Park on the 20th story, if he looks out their window, they don't see Coburg or Port Hope exist or Northumberland. They can't see it from there. Mm-hmm. But if we have somebody here, and I, you know, one of my goals it's been is to make sure that the board members for the LHINs here, although it's huge, to make sure it's got some local representation. And sometimes it's a bit of a struggle.
Well, I noticed that we just had someone from Campbellford put on the board locally. Yeah. I think that's been the first time in several years.
Actually, the very first LHIN, the chair, used to be the chair of Northumberland's Hospital. Mm-hmm. She was.
Yeah.
Then Dr. Hockovich, used to be the medical officer of health for Northumberland County. After he retired, he sat on that board for 3 years or something like that. And then we had a law, and I don't know why, mm-hmm. that we had nobody from this area.
Yeah.
So I've been working very, very hard. I try to encourage people, give your time, because it is a voluntary position, but it's a very, very important role.
Are we not just setting up? I mean, I understand the perspective here. I get why they want to do it, because, of course, locally people are saying, well, what does Queen's Park know? All we're getting is what Queen's Park tells us. They don't really know what's going on here. So the LHINs bring us that much closer. And now we're having these localer LHINs bringing us that much closer. But really, that's three levels of bureaucracy now, on top of whatever is happening at the hospital. How much is that costing us, and is that cost effective?
So my the goal of the LHINs, and as you know, it goes beyond that. I mean, they're taking on the CCAC's responsibilities as well.
Yes,
because
exactly.
They're going to be
the
gone.
New changes, that's right.
So when the whole, and the LHINs have agreed to this, by the way, through their agreement, after the whole restructuring, that's going to take a couple of years, because it's major restructuring, that there will be savings of somewhere between 8 and 10%. So, and that money will totally be reinvested within that LHIN perimeter. I mean, when people say the LHINs are another LHINs, and now with sub-LHINs duplication, and I think we had this discussion here before, either here or at Cogeco, Dave, is the reality is that we've taken, and I'm only talking numbers now, not physical people, but prior to the LHINs, there were 7,000 people working in the Ministry of Health bureaucracy across the province. We've taken some of those numbers and redeployed them through the LHINs. So there hasn't been really, in general terms, any increase in additional bureaucracy. It just changed the face of the bureaucracy. It's come, because, I mean, I can call the chair of the or the director of the Central East LHIN, which I have two LHINs, by the way, and have that discussion about Northumberland's Hospital. I was in Campbellford today with some other issues. Monday I'm going to have a chat with the folks responsible for that, mm-hmm. You know, on the other end of the phone. So it really makes it more local. Is it perfect? Well, you know what my saying is, there's nothing that's perfect. You know, it's pretty difficult.
So what we're going to be seeing, though, for the listeners out there, just so you guys are all aware, we're seeing on an ongoing basis, additional funding of approximately 2% for the hospital. We're going to see a reduction in terms of overhead costs by about 10% for the lens.
Tell me about it.
Now, again, the issue, though, you said 10%. That's great for the Central East Lynn. That means that that money will stay in the Central East Lynn.
Absolutely.
So that money's not going anywhere.
Absolutely not.
Okay, because typically what you'll see, and I know this from talking to people who work for different ministries, you know, when there is a savings, then that money is now gone.
That money stays within the healthcare system. I mean, one of the other things that's part of the, the new structure or healthcare is also trying to bring primary healthcare and the health units under the Lynn's umbrella, because what's been happening, we have a lot of silos. For example, public health does a fantastic job when it comes to education or prevention, but they're in a silo of their own.
Mm-hmm.
Family docs, primary health care, they're a structure of their own. So some of those reporting mechanism is going to be done, hopefully, under one umbrella, so that it'll hopefully eliminate some duplication.
Okay. So in the long run, we're going to see savings, but we're going to see those savings poured back into services. Because, again, the real scream, and we're going to get to this, because I know part of the Auditor General's report talked about mental health and the fact that people who have mental health issues, I mean, we look at homelessness and mental health. We look at drug addiction and mental health. There are so many things that are tied into the treatment or lack of treatment and services for mental health that it doesn't seem as though it's getting the appropriate airtime, if you will. We're going to take our first break of the hour. When we come back, more of our conversation with Lou Rinaldi right here on Trinity Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. I'm Dave Glover. This is The Drive Time.
Hi, I'm Pete Fisher. Join me and Dave Glover Fridays at 5 during The Drive Time for Life in the Fishbowl right here on Northumberland 89.7.
Start your week off the right way with a new lunch hour talk show right here on Northumberland 89.7. Jeff Kane presents Northumberland Focus Mondays at noon following the news. Jeff and his guests will be chatting about the important issues affecting Northumberland County, personal finance, local business, community events, and much more. That's Northumberland Focus with Jeff Kane every Monday at noon right here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Scrooge awoke on Christmas morning.
You're there, lad.
What?
Do you know the saxophone in the window at Long and McQuaid?
The one as big as me?
Yes, yes, wonderful boy, delightful lad. I need it sent to Tiny Tim, along with instruments for the rest of the family.
Later at the Crutch at Home. Come into any Long and McQuaid musical instruments this Christmas for some expert advice. Long and McQuaid offers the best service, best selection, and best price. Shop online at long-mcquaid.com.
We're the radio station that's all about Northumberland. Listen every day for local news, interviews with local newsmakers, music by local artists, and so much more. We are Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
And welcome back to the big broadcast. I'm Dave Glover. Joining me in the studio, Lou Rinaldi. You're a member of Provincial Parliament for Northumberland Quinte West, and Rob Washburn. Rob, you had a question.
Yeah, I did. Thanks, Dave. When we're talking about healthcare, one of the things that came out in the Auditor General's report was a number of things around healthcare, and one of them was the need for long-term care homes to relieve the stresses on hospitals. And I want to know, when are we going to see some more long-term care beds outside of the hospital setting in Northumberland?
Yeah, and it's a real good question. It's something certainly that the Minister of Health is engaged on. One of the things that we've been concentrating the last, 7 or 8, 10 years, is a lot of people want to stay home. I mean, I have a mother-in-law that's it'll be 92 in a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
She lives on her own. She still drives, but she needs some help. So she has a PSW, goes in a couple of times because she wants to stay home. But in the other hand, I have a mother that needs long-term care long-term care facility,
mm-hmm.
and she's on the waiting list.
Yeah.
So I think what you're going to be seeing, Rob, on the move forward, we kind of lost a bit of focus on the long-term care beds because we want to make sure that the people who wanted to stay home had supports to stay home.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're maximizing that particular sector So that other sector that needs the long-term, like my mother does, it's something we need to re-engage. And it's something that I think in not too distant future, you're going to see some movement in that part. To what extent, I don't have that. But it's certainly something that's top of mind right now.
Well, it was really interesting because in the Auditor General's report, they talk about 4,000 people in Ontario use beds that no longer need them. And they're saying, the report said interestingly that if those beds were freed, hospitals could serve an additional 37,500 more patients because those beds would be free. So you'd think that there would be a real impetus to kind of get these sorts of things. And especially when we talk about peaking out at 50%, 50% of our population being of an older demographic, the demand for these beds, especially in our area, is going to be extraordinarily high. Are you hearing any movement at all in terms of expansion of current homes? Or I know that there was talk at one time at the county, expansion of the municipal homes.
So there have been 72 additional beds in the last couple of years in the east end of my riding, in Quinte West.
Mm-hmm.
There's been, we just announced a few months back, in one home in Quinte West again that serviced the, you know, the part of the Quinte area, a redevelopment, some beds that were no longer feasible to be in operation. They're going to come in line. I just can't remember the number right now, but I'm thinking it's 50, 60 beds at Crown Ridge in Trenton that are going to come back in line. So there is some of that going on because we do have some homes that they're Class C that are really not being used or they're being discouraged to being used. So some of that is going on as we speak.
Okay, well, it's interesting that you say that in the province is looking at this long-term care issue. But one of the issues that came to the fore a little more than a month ago is this issue of the care that these people are receiving. And, you know, I mean, I've spoken to people who have family in elder care facilities, not necessarily here, but mostly in Toronto. And one of the things they've noticed is that if, for instance, if your parents, if you're going to visit your father because you're there, because the staff knows you, because they know you're coming in to visit, that person will get better care. But the people who aren't being visited, the people who don't necessarily have someone coming in to see them on a regular basis, what we're seeing, and there has been some reports in the media as well as some charges late in the summertime about people who aren't being cared for appropriately. I mean, you may remember the issue coming up about putting closed circuit TV and, if you will, surveillance in nursing homes because of some of the problems with elder care. I mean, is that something that the province is even thinking about at this point? Is this on their radar?
I think what we need to do is have a better handle on that stuff because, I mean, and I'm not suggesting that long-term care facility get the right amount of funding or not adequate or whatever. But, you know, we have some homes that we don't have any issues. We have some homes that we have issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've increased the inspection rate. You know, they don't get called anymore before an inspector goes. I mean, these are on spur of the moment. So because we did have a lot of those issues.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some locally here. I won't mention any names.
Mm-hmm.
But the inspection process has been somewhat increased. But it's not necessarily from lack of money. It's just the operation because a lot of those homes are private. You know, and in the private sector, I mean, there's got to be a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And having said that, maybe some weren't looking after the folks as they should have. And so that's really the inspection piece that has increased dramatically in the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, what defines something as a care facility, though? Because, I mean, there's a difference, right? There's a difference between a retirement residence or a palliative care facility or a seniors residence. I mean, how does one determine? I mean, if for instance, if you're going to put your elder parent into a facility or they want to move into a facility, a community that of people their same age, you know, there are places in town here where they can move in. It's just like living in a condo. They've got some great friends they can make.
So,
and then there's the other end.
Those
right?
are totally privately funded. So, I mean, you know, my mother is in one of those homes with lots of assistance until she gets a long-term care bed available. So, you know, my mother, and thank God my mother and father looked after, you know, down the road. It's not cheap. So that home meets certain standards, you know, like a condo would or maybe a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a long-term care facility that are a lot more scrutinized because they're partially funded by the by the province, by taxpayers' dollars. And that's, I think, where the discrepancy that you were talking about was happening in some of those homes. There was a lot of attention paid on bank accounts and not enough attention to the residents of that home.
But I guess the thing is, too, is that with the changes to the hospital, one part of the plan that was implemented here locally in the hospital was to transfer some of these long-term care beds. They've got a new service plan for those beds as well. And it just seems to me that what you're describing is a very fragile situation. I mean, you talked about new beds opening up in the east end of our area, but what about the west end? And, you know, with these changes up there, I mean, when do we hit a critical point where it tips and then we're into trouble? What is being said down in Queen's Park to sort of get that urgent message that we're in this fragile state?
Well, as I said a minute ago, the attention has been sharp in the last year. It's been sharply turned into creating more beds because we know that, I believe right here, they're tying up 10, 12 beds, if not more. I think that's the number that I'm talking, that those beds, frankly, it comes out of the hospital-based funding. Mm-hmm. It's not what that funding is for, right? Mm-hmm. So there has been a lot more attention. Hence, I mentioned what happened in the east end of the riding. Mm-hmm. And I'm hopeful that in not too distant future, more of that will come to play. But certainly the focus has turned. We're not going to take anything away from keeping people at home because, I mean, that's working really, really well. Mm-hmm. But we also know that we, as a government, fell a little bit behind on the residential component.
One of the other things in the Auditor General's report that was rather surprising and has gotten a lot of press is physician compensation. And, you know, they talk about it being about $11.6 billion or 23% of the total funding in health care.
Goes to doctors.
That goes to doctors. And I guess one of the things that was sort of surprising that didn't get a lot of coverage, but maybe you could speak about, is this move of creating group practices, which has happened a lot down here in our area, and we have a number of them across the county, where these group of doctors provide a sort of a basket of services, and instead of being paid on a per person or a fee for service basis, they get a fee for enrollment. And one of the things that the Auditor General pointed out was that in the past year, the government has spent an additional $522 million extra that they paid for that they wouldn't have paid for if they had have had it as a fee for service, because they're paying for these enrolled patients. I'm wondering if you could tell me, is there still a future for that kind of a system, or are you guys looking at maybe changing things?
So the group piece, I mean, the family health team is one that we hear a lot of, which was formed. As a matter of fact, the very first family health team was in Brighton when we announced it back in 2004 or 5, whatever it was.
Yeah.
So under that scenario, you're right. Doctors get so much a month or a year, whatever, for every roster patient that they have. And then if I'm a roster patient, which I am, if I go and see the doctor, they get an additional, you know, whatever the pay scale is. So, I mean, 99% of the doctors, I think, and this is my own thinking, do a fantastic job and they abide by the rules and so forth.
Absolutely.
Then you got that other percentage, which is a small percentage, that take advantage of those circumstances. And hence, I think the Auditor General said that in general, I mean, agreed with what other experts said, that Ontario doctors are the highest paid in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And one doesn't want to deprive of a right compensation. The reality, there's a few of them that took really advantage. You know, you hear some staggering numbers for from some doctors. So,
well, just to give the listeners an example, the Ministry of Health didn't investigate billing by 9 specialists who claimed to work more than 360 days for fiscal year 2015, including 6 of them. These are specialists who billed for 366 days. So they actually billed an extra year. So two issues there, obviously, from the auditor's perspective. No doctor, as far as anyone knows, is working 360 days a year.
None.
I mean, it's 365 days a year. You're telling me this doctor took 5 days off? That is very difficult to believe. And also the idea of billing for 366 days. Oh. So, I mean, these are things. And again, a lot of that has to do with keeping your eye on the ball, right? And who's actually watching how the bills are being paid?
Dave, it's even worse than that. I mean, the report also said that there are doctors who are working only 3.5, 4 days a week. And they're not working in the evenings as they're required to under their agreement. They're not working on weekends as they're supposed to in their agreement. There's even walk-in clinics that they're supposed to be creating that are not being created, that are part of the agreement that we already exist. Mm-hmm. It's just not being enforced, which I think is your point. So I guess what the question is, when are we going to start seeing some enforcement?
So there has been, I mean, when it comes to that piece, and I mean, I don't know the stuff down in the weeds, but I'll talk about what I know, is that a lot of it, you know, we sign agreements with OMA about their fee schedule and how it's, you know. So mm-hmm. one would presume as a government that that is adhered to. As I said before, some of them don't adhere to. I can tell you that some of that stuff that the Auditor General reported on, the excessive billing, I mean, it's not new. I mean, it was in the media about a year ago mm-hmm. or so. There's, as we speak, a number of investigations going on. That addresses. I mean, in general, I found out the other day from many of the ministers that about 50% of all the issues that the Auditor General identified, it's something that already had surfaced, and its processes to investigate or rectify it are in place.
So who's responsible for that, though? Is that something the OMA? Does the province get to go to the OMA and say, okay, these are your doctors. You guys agreed to these terms, and we're being seriously overbilled here. How do we get that money back? And is the recourse then to take on the OMA for that money?
Well, as you know, we have other issues with OMA right now. I mean, you know, they haven't had a contract for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of draw a line in the sand, which is going to be difficult. But so... Not, I mean, there's some issues that I'm a bit aware of, but I cannot talk public because those investigations are in process. So, I mean, I'm not trying to push it away. Ultimately, those responsibility, the buck stops with the government of the day. I mean, and we have to be a realist.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is that the government of the day. Of any day. I mean, this is not new that just happened now. I mean, this has been happening with every government. I don't think it's ever,
Well, I remember hearing reports back in the 80s and 90s about almost exactly the same thing.
So all I'm saying
is it's systematic.
When governments become aware, I'll just give you an idea. Up to about two months ago, I had the pleasure of being in the standing committee on public accounts. So I sat with the Auditor General every Wednesday morning for an hour and 3 hours in the afternoon to go over the audits and re-audits, because some of those things she identified this year, a year or so down the road, she'll do a follow-up audit to see that is anything changed. So right now there's follow-up audits in 2014-15. And so there is a recheck, I guess. And in a majority of the cases, not all, you'll see that those improvements, do happen. I mean, when people talk about some shortfalls in MTO, I mean, I don't go with a shovel in the middle of 401 and make sure that, you know, they're doing the right thing. When those things are discovered, people have not adhered to their contracts. MTO, we had some horrible conditions for a couple of years in the 401 right here. Mm-hmm. So the contractor, it was fined for not adhering to those. It's no different if I speed on a 401. If I get caught, I get paid. So I guess you have some faith that people would adhere to what they agree to. It mm-hmm. doesn't happen all the time. And that goes back with the doctors as well that overbilled.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of our conversation with Lou Rinaldi right here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. We haven't had any calls yet, but as always, our lines are open at 905-372-2321 or 905-372-2391. I'm Dave Glover. We will be right back.
Shimmy, shake, move, and groove while listening to adventurous stories from around the world. Come on and join me, The Traveler, host of Capsize, every Friday night, 10 to midnight, Remember to ride the wave and don't capsize right here on Northumberland 89.7. Truly local radio.
Baby, I like your style.
Come on out to Hometown Bingo on Saturday, December the 3rd for our Christmas Cash Bingos. At the 7 p.m. sessions, all regular games, $500 and $1,000. Second Chance Jackpot, $1,000. At the 9:45 p.m. session, all regular games, $150 and $200. Regular pricing in effect. We are located at 884 Division Street. Call us at 905-372-5426 or visit us at hometownbingo.ca. Our license number is 7884.
Keep your dial locked right here at 89.7 Truly Local Radio.
Welcome back to the big broadcast. My guest in studio, Lou Rinaldi. You're a member of Provincial Parliament for Northumberland Quinte West, Rob Washburn as well. We've been talking about the Auditor General's report. And for more information on this, by the way, listeners, you can go directly to the provincial government website or just Google or whatever your search engine is, Ontario Auditor General's report. All of the information is there for you to check out yourself. And I'm sure Lou would be happy to hear from you. 372-4000 is the number at the office. So you can always call the office. The folks there are always happy to take your call. I want to move on, though. I want to talk about something that I'm excited about because, you know, earlier this week I read the piece about the gingerbread houses that are displayed here in Coburg for Habitat for Humanity. And so I spoke to Megan at Habitat, and we're going to get her on the show. She, unfortunately, was under the weather. But one of the things I asked her was, you know, and you and I have talked about this, it's a no-brainer. Why isn't the province working with Habitat for Humanity to build social housing? They've got the program in place. All they really need is the province to act as a guarantor, essentially. And Megan tells me, and again, I'm not even sure if we can publicly talk about this yet, Lou, but I understand that the provincial government is working with Habitat for Humanity.
So we started a discussion, I would say, probably more intense. I mean, there's always been a discussion, but more intense, I would say, a year ago, 18 months ago. And there is... I'm hopeful there's going to be some movement towards that because you're right. They're doing it, and they're doing a good job. The other piece that's not very public is I was able the Ontario, and I think I got it close, the Legions Brighton Command, so Ontario Legions, they have a housing support for veterans that it's I learned just this about Remembrance Day. I spoke to their executive director that happens to be from Brighton, but she works Toronto Way or whatever Legion Command is for Ontario. I learned about this fantastic program that they have to help with housing for veterans, amongst many other things that they do. So I was able to connect her with the Minister of Housing and Poverty Reduction, and now there's a dialogue to see how we can help them even do even more, because especially in our area, we do have a lot of folks from the military that have stayed here, retired here.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that piece. So I'm hopeful that in both of those fronts, you'll see more engagement with the province, because with a little help, as you said, that the province could give them, I think they could do a lot more.
Well, we know there was a report just done recently. We're going to actually have some guests in the studio next week to talk about the housing report that is being put together or has been put together here in the county. We know there is a large number of people, really, actually, a significant number of people who are permanently homeless. And that's people who've been without a home for 18 months or longer. And we're talking about 28 families. And that's a number of children as well. So, I mean, I understand. Again, I'm not one of these guys who believes the government should just throw out the money, because I don't really think the government, as a taxpayer, I don't want to see us going into any more debt than we're already in, because I know nobody's going to be able to pay this money back. But by the same token, we need to be able to provide people. One of the things that providing a house through Habitat for Humanity does is it gives people a roof over their head, but it also gives them a jumping off point for perhaps a new beginning in their lives. Now, Habitat is looking to build 5 houses next year, and I know the province is going to be helping them, but is the province doing this? Is this something that's going to be rolled out across the province?
Well, it will be. It will be. I mean, we'll work with. I mean, part of the intent is it's province wide, not just local. But I give credit to the local folks here in Northumberland that were one of the first folks at the table when we started talking about this collectively with Habitat for Humanity and And frankly, we talk to the folks Canada-wide, but with focus for us for us here. So I think you're going to see some of those partnerships. I met with the folks here that did the homeless study, you know, 20,000, whatever the title is. And I got some preliminary numbers I think it was about a week ago. So they're not quite got everything compiled yet. But I've made arrangements with the Ministry of Housing and Poverty Reduction for a senior policy folks, because I really like what they did here, and it you know, that research. I think it's very real, and it's very tangible that you can touch, feel, and see. Hopefully in the new year there'll be some dialogue of looking at what we've done here in Northumberland County as sort of a template to move the R6.
It's interesting, too, because homelessness in larger urban centers tends to be a more visible thing, whereas in rural areas like ours, it tends to be more invisible because people couch surf, people can find temporary shelter in different places. So we don't see it as much around us, and it's not part of our culture and our experience.
So we have a couple of things that, you know, I identified a long time ago. You know, when it comes to rural Ontario and poverty and homeless. One, we don't measure homeless in Northumberland County or any other rural community such as ours by the number of people that sleep on the sidewalk like they do on Bay Street or Yonge Street and Brewer Street, which, you know, I see every day when I'm in Toronto, right? Night and day. And the other, so we have poverty that, you know, somebody lives in a fifth concession that doesn't have a car, that doesn't have it only has a leaky roof over their head. And the other piece that I think it's even more, because that's a discussion I had with the folks that did the study here, because the other piece I think it's even more important when we're trying to identify the need for homeless is that rural Ontarians are too proud to say, I need help. They'll suffer in their house with no, you know, with a leaky roof, no gas in the tank, and they don't tell anybody. And there is that. I mean, I see it. But those people don't put their hand up. But we cannot leave them behind. So that's the discussion I had with the folks here just a week ago. And I think they did some of that through, you know, refer a friend. And I think that's what really, really impressed me, the approach that they took. So I'm anxiously waiting for their, I mean, it was their choices. No, no, we want to get refine our findings a little bit more. They have a little bit more work to do. So I'm really looking forward to January to try to incorporate. The other piece to this is, and we don't know where we are, is that the federal government has shown some interest with the housing piece again. So I don't know what that's going to be. I know I was in Ottawa 3 weeks ago. Our whole Ontario caucus, Liberal caucus, met with our federal counterparts in Ottawa in one meeting. At the Hill, and housing and homeless was one of the topics that you know, we have to share that responsibility. They supported that issue, and I know it, perfect example here, the municipal sector here in our community shows their responsibility. They want to partner, so I think as we move forward, I think there's going to be some opportunities to.
All right. Well, that sounds good. Some of the highlight points here, folks, 30% of homeless individuals and 50% of homeless families have a high level of need where the most appropriate intervention would be permanent supportive housing. Another finding was the average length of time individuals are homeless in Northumberland County is 31 months. Think about that. That's almost 3 years, listeners. 42% of homeless individuals surveyed are chronically homeless, meaning they've been homeless for six or more months in the past year. 18 families surveyed were identified, including 25 children. 100% of homeless families surveyed were single parents, and their average length of time homeless is 8 months. And 20% of individuals identified as homeless are youth aged 16 to 24. So these are very stark numbers, especially when we hear from Ottawa, from the fact, you know, we've seen the job numbers go up, but they're primarily part-time, precarious. And you and I talked about this before, just-in-time employment, which really doesn't lend itself to any type of long-term economic plan for anyone. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more of our conversation with Lou Rinaldi right here on The Drive Time. We'll be right back.
Looking to change your mind? Grab a cup of curiosity and join me Thursdays at 12 noon. for conversation with cutting-edge thinkers that invites you to think differently about yourself and the world. Update your thinking, the Jan Sprague Show, here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Come out and enjoy a fabulous movie-going experience at the Rainbow Cinemas.
Playing December 2nd to the 8th. Moana, rated PG, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, rated PG, and Allied, rated 14A.
The Rainbow Cinemas are located in the Northumberland Mall, 1111 Elgin Street West. Give them a call, 905-372-2444, or visit rainbowcinemas.ca.
Follow Northumberland 89.7 on social media. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Get connected through our website at northumberland897.ca.
And welcome back to the big broadcast. I'm Dave Glover. You're listening to Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio. This is The Drive Time, Canada's only holistic political chat. With me, Lou Rinaldi, your member of provincial parliament for Northumberland, Quinte West, and Rob Washburn. Rob, you have the talking stick.
Oh, thanks so much, Dave. You were talking about
homeless.
Habitat for Humanity, yep. Pardon me. And one of the things that the Auditor General talks about at length is the use of third parties and non-government organizations to deliver services on behalf of the government. And in her report, she talks about in employment and training, there's about 400 third-party service providers who are doing employment and training piece for the government with a budget of about $1 billion. Now, we were talking a bit earlier about employment, and one of the things that has come out has been the fact that there are no regional labor force statistics to inform us about the demand for jobs and skills in particular areas. And I just wondered, how is it that your government can design employment and training programs and help people when, in fact, as the Auditor General's report found out, that a lot of these people are getting training, but then they're not getting jobs afterwards. And so the whole piece around statistics and the fact that people are taking training but are not finding jobs in their chosen careers, what's happening?
Well, I mean, there might not be, and I'm not fluent specific to your question, Rob, but I mean, we say that, for example, that we don't have statistics. And well, you know, there are some boards that do have some numbers, but we need to do better. But for example, let's look locally. I mean, you know, you're quite familiar with Loyalist College.
Absolutely.
I mean, Loyalist College provides a lot of just-in-time training for mm-hmm. some specific industries in the area. Mm-hmm. We probably need to do more than that. I know that Fleming College, about a year and a half ago, did an enormous, maybe a little bit longer, but within the last couple of years, an enormous amount of research to the needs of the, you know, the Peterborough and Northumberland, sort of their catchment area, to try to address, you know, what courses do we offer next. Mm-hmm. You know, we introduced, which I think was fairly successful, a program four or five years ago. What was it, Job First, or I'm just having a, where, you know, people looking for a job or they just lost their job.
Talk about second career?
Second career, that's it. That it's been it's been rejigged a couple of times to meet the demands of the day. That's delivers, I think, some, from what I hear, some decent results. And because we're just in a on time, you know, just in time way of doing things today, because things change even in industry, we need to be that flexible. So, I mean, I don't have a straight answer, Rob, to the fact of the Auditor General report. I know that the minister, along with, in that particular case, Minister Matthews, has committed to adopting all the Auditor report recommendation, and I'm sure it will be one of the things that certainly will be addressed.
Well, that is actually one of the bigger issues, too, when it comes to employment, because what we're seeing, I mean, you and I talked about this before. Mm-hmm. When we were younger, right, you finish high school, you know, you get a job somewhere, the company wouldn't, you didn't even have to have experience. As a matter of fact, they preferred you to have no experience. That way they could train you to do the job the way they wanted you to do the job. But now they don't train people anymore. I mean, it seems that way. Maybe they do. Maybe there are companies out there that are training. But for the most part, they expect people to come with the training already ready to go. So who's paying for that training if they're not willing to provide it? And really, why aren't they providing it? I mean, the government has given these companies, large corporations, for instance, if you're a plastic extrusion company or whatever, and they've given them lots of money in corporate tax breaks. They've given them easements on their hydro expenses. We've offered companies all kinds of breaks and benefits to keep their jobs here in Ontario. And at the same time, they want the provincial government and the taxpayers to pay to train their workforce for them. I mean, how much do we have to continue to give these guys?
But well, it's even worse than that. We're talking about people who, you know, we have several of these employment agencies locally.
Yeah.
And they get government funding to train people to do jobs. And what this Auditor General's report is telling us, and I think we need some assurance that these organizations here, they're taking people's lives. You know, people are desperate. They're coming to them and saying, hey, help me find a job.
Yep.
And then what's happening is they're putting them through programs, and then they're coming out and they still can't find a job. And I guess, there needs to be some accountability, especially, too. I mean, the kinds of jobs that they're offering people are contract work. They're precarious jobs. They're not full. You know, I don't know how many are full time. We don't have the stats and we don't have the figures to tell us that these organizations in our own community are doing the jobs that they need to do. And I guess that's why I was curious about this question, because, you know, when you live in a rural area like this, it's not like I can get on a bus and, you know, live in Scarborough and go to Etobicoke to work a place and take public transit to do it. And
we have no subway stops.
That's right. So, I mean, it's pretty tough. And when we were talking earlier about how people struggle for homes and making ends meet, this is all part of the package. So I guess I'm sorry, Dave, I didn't mean to jump on your point, but I think it's really important to realize just what we're talking about, because we do have a number of these employment agencies around
the world. Well, and to that point, I mean, there really would be no benefit for the province to get on board with an organization like Habitat for Humanity when we're going to be providing homes for people who are not going to be able to pay the mortgage that they're able to pay because of the precarious employment.
Yeah. I mean, we get that, and I think we need to get to better at that. I mean, the day of somebody working, and we're talking about offline with my father-in-law working for Tipper Richardson for 40, 50 years, those days are gone. I think we have to recognize that. I think what's important today, though, and I just want to make a point as we wind down here, is job numbers as of today. I forget the increase, but Ontario's got one of the lowest job numbers in all of Canada, 6.1%.
And
the federal number is 6.8, I believe. So, and it's been consistent now for the last 9 or 10 months. It goes down. And they're not all full-time jobs. I mean, we want to be realistic, but we do have, we are, I think, wrong, right, or in between, we are making some advances to try to find people jobs. And because when people work, they spend money, and it's better for the economy.
Well, I want to thank you for being here, Lou. We didn't get a chance to talk about hydro, which is one of the issues I know we wanted to talk about, but we didn't. Time's up, unfortunately. We'll have Lou back another time to talk about that. I want to thank Rob Washburn for being here as well. We're going to go to the news in just a moment. But before we do that, here is Ontario, a place to stand, right here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland, 89.7. Thanks, Lou.
Thank you.
Give us a place to stand.